What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 221 of the Massive Breakdown Podcast. We have a fantastic episode for you coming to you a couple nights early this week, actually recording on a Tuesday night. So hopefully this podcast will be out before the TWAB, maybe Thursday morning, maybe Wednesday. We'll see when I get around to editing it. But we have a fantastic episode for you. We are basically going to be answering a lot of listener questions. We have a ton of listener questions sitting in that podcast discussions channel up in the pinned message. So we're going to begin to those. I think we have 8 of them. They're all fantastic, super thought-provoking. It's kind of early in the week. Not a ton is happening. The season is winding down. So we figured, why not do a whole episode of listener questions? So that's what we're going to get to after we get the introductions out of the way. As always, I'm your host, Mercules, joined tonight by Kit Kutcha. And how are you doing on a Tuesday evening?
Well, Mercules, I am doing pretty dang fantastic. I am done with work for the week, going to the beach, and not coming back. So it's, I'm coming back, but like, you know, not till the end of the week. So pretty hyped up for that. Definitely going to be enjoying what is left of summer as much as I possibly can. How about you, man?
That sounds like a pretty good time. It must be nice to take a few days off work and kind of just get out and go somewhere and hang out and enjoy yourself and not have to worry about life's day-to-day stresses. I'm pretty jealous of that, actually. It's been busy, man. Had the in-laws in town. I guess not technically my in-laws yet, but my fiance's family was in town. We were actually finalizing plans for the wedding, and so it was a very stressful 10 days that they were here.
Oh boy.
Which is a very long time living in our house. That's actually the reason why we're about a week and a half behind on Beneath Twin Suns, because I actually did not even have time to watch the Clone Wars episodes at all. I spent zero time alone in front of the television over the last 10 days. So it's been a little bit rough. Even when I was like playing Splitgate for the few minutes that I got, there was someone sitting in the living room with me watching me play, critiquing. So it was quite a lot. I'm definitely enjoying the fact that the house is a little bit quieter now that they're not here.
Yeah.
I do love them very much, but you know, just 10 days with 3 people living in the house is quite a bit of time. Cause it wasn't just her parents. It was her parents and her little sister came. So it was like a whole thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it is what it is. This weekend, my fiance is going out of town to visit one of her friends. And so I will have the house entirely empty, just myself and the cat. And that to me sounds perfect.
Yeah. You know, sometimes you need that too. So I absolutely hope that you enjoy it and take advantage of it, because sometimes that alone time only gets more valuable the older you get.
Yeah.
That's what I found.
I think a lot of us in the video game community can understand the perspective of being a little bit introverted, right? I like to say I'm an extrovert or introvert, but the way I recharge is definitely alone time.
Yeah.
Alone, playing video games, time to think without anyone talking to me. Like, that's the key right there. That's perfection. That's chef's kiss. So regardless of that, I am ready for this episode. So housekeeping wise, it's an easy one because I just had an episode like 4 days ago. So we don't really have a ton to go over. I don't believe there's any new Patreon news. Is there?
Nothing new, just the usual thank yous. We always like to take just a moment, show our appreciation for everyone who is so generous in supporting the podcast and the spreadsheet and everything that we're trying to do to get good info out into the community and support other folks who are doing the same. So thank you so much to everyone who is listening, who is pledging, and a very special shout out to the Massive Breakdown Six Pack, Zen SoCal, A Solitary Bird, ASCII and Monk, Deacon, Conquer King 420, and the Shazzle. That's right.
No, there's not much better than a good six pack.
There's not, you know. I think We've learned this from the Spicy Brews channel, right? There's a lot of six packs going on in there, and now we've got our own, and it is pretty dang epic.
It's a variety six pack as well.
It is.
They're not all the same. It's not just like a six pack of Yinglings. It's a six pack of some local craft brews.
It is. Yeah. These Guardians are from all over the place, all different kinds of players, and they just go above and beyond to show some love and support on a massive level. And we thank them for it. And that is the Patron's Corner for today.
Nice. And And we do have a podcast review. This one is from someone with a great name. The name is Siri Calls Me Batman. It's one of the best for Destiny fans, 5 stars. A great podcast for Destiny and Star Wars fans alike. These two know what they're talking about more than most when it comes to the ins and outs of Destiny weapons, sandbox playstyles, and more. Great advice on which roles to hunt for the weapons, breakdowns on the perks themselves, and so much more. If you play Destiny and are interested in learning more about the game as a whole, look no further and educate yourself by listening to this. Thank you very much. Siri Calls Me Batman, which is a fantastic name. I have said it every time someone mentions it, but I will continue to say it. I love hearing people acknowledge the Star Wars podcast and their views as well, even though it's a, I know it's not what most of you come here to listen to, but a weird statistical anomaly was that for about a month and a half, our Star Wars episodes were actually outperforming their paired Destiny episode that was going along with it. Now, things have flipped back to normal and the Destiny episodes are doing it again, but that was a weird little thing, and it just showed that there's a lot of support out there for the Star Wars stuff that we do kind of just for fun, so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you know who you have to thank for those Star Wars episodes, right? That's the patrons.
It's the patrons.
That's a bonus, like a stretch goal reward. That's why we started doing them. And now we really, really hope that we get to keep doing them. So
that was two stretch goal rewards.
They crushed the first one,
which was one bonus episode a month, and they crushed the second one, which was two bonus episodes a month. And then we were like, okay, I don't know how many more episodes we can do.
Yeah.
I think we have to stop putting stretch goals there. Speaking of patron stuff, I believe you ordered us both our own patron mugs because we are suckers for our own merchandise and we love to buy it. I actually went to the local coffee shop that I frequent and asked them if they would hold on to my mug for me once I got it and just give me that mug every time I came in. And they said, yes. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah. I'm pretty psyched to get this mug. It's nice. Part of the reason I'm excited is because it's fun to do stuff that isn't a shirt.
Yeah.
I know, you know, like t-shirts are kind of a classic, like you get the t-shirt, right? But I think we all have a lot of shirts these days, and it just felt like it was time for something different. So the mug is exciting. You can drink water out of it, coffee, milk, juice. I mean, your beverage of choice.
Whiskey.
Beer, whiskey. It'll hold it. It'll hold it all. So it's very exciting. I think we're going to have to do some more mugs in the future.
I do like the mug idea. I also like the sticker idea that we did. I think the sticker was pretty great.
Yeah, the sticker's awesome. I can't wait for those to come out, start seeing people posting pictures with them. Looking forward to that.
We will have to do shirts again at some point, though, because we're going to need a new set of shirts to wear to Guardian Con next year when they finally go back to, sorry, GCX, not yes. Guardian Con. When they finally go back to doing those in person, we're going to need a new set of shirts for that. So maybe we'll do shirts next year. But for now, I'm looking forward to that mug.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. All right. Well, let's stay with the momentum we've had the last several episodes and call that some housekeeping. And let's roll right on in to the meat of the episode.
And I do want to clarify that if you pay attention to the order of these questions, you will see that our sponsor who asked a question is at the top, followed by a couple of patrons who ask questions. And the reason being, we can be bought. If you are a patron and you ask a question, we do a listener questions thing, we will bump you to the top of the list. That way, you know, we will always make sure we get to your question. We prioritize it. We can be bought. We do have a price, and it turns out it's not a ton of money. So
that's true. That's absolutely true. And, you know, I've been enjoying these listener question episodes. The feedback I've been hearing is that listeners seem to be enjoying them as well. So I think this is something we're going to continue to do. Should note, we do have a pin in the podcast discussion channel of our Discord server. And if you go there, you click on the little pin button. There's a link to a Google Docs sheet, and you can just go in there, type your question, type what you'd like us to call you. It's very helpful. Or you can leave it anonymously if you prefer. There's nothing wrong with that. We'll answer it just the same. And so when we do listener questions, we check there first. If it's a little bit sparse, we might go to the channel and solicit some additional questions. But typically we're going to prioritize what we see in there. So that is the way to ask questions for us. If you're not a member of the Discord, I would encourage you to join. Very, very easy. We do have a link pinned on our Twitter at DestinyMBP. So you can go there. You can find links to all of the things. And yeah, so you can join right there. If you're not on Twitter, you can always message one of us on Reddit. We'd be happy to send you an invite. I think every now and then when a post goes up on Reddit, there's an invite link there as well. So yeah, lots of ways to join. And if you're already in Discord, then you can also message us there. So pretty easy.
Yeah, absolutely. So on to the first question. It's from A Solitary Burn. He says, do you think that Adept weapons are a meaningful upgrade from their normal counterparts? If not, what improvements could be made to the Adept tier without increasing power creep? This is actually a great question.
It is.
And I'm of two minds, right? The first mind is that when Adept weapons were announced, I was not at all excited about them. I thought they don't really have anything that makes me want to chase them. Now, what has changed with that is that the Adept mods are in fact very good. And I really like the Adept mods. So the Adept mods on their own have pretty much meant the difference for me between Adept weapons being something I care about and Adept weapons being something I don't care about at all. The Adept weapon itself, if you recall, just gets a guaranteed second option for a perk, be it a PvP or Trials Adept or a Nightfall Adept. And it gets a Masterwork that gives you an extra, I think, 2 points to every stat when you Masterwork your preferred, you know, your given stat, which is like range or stability, gets 2 points to everything else. That's not really a huge difference, right? In most guns, you probably can't tell the difference at all. So there's really very little power creep there. It's only important for people who are like min-maxing. Like, I absolutely have to have the best stats. The extra perk, I mean, even with Celerity being buffed, I still don't really use Celerity on the guns that I would care about having it on. I don't know about Bottomless Grief so much for PvE because I haven't really done any of the Grandmaster Nightfalls, so haven't really had much of an option to play around with it. So, I mean, part of me wishes that, like, Adept weapons had an extra perk. Like, part of me wishes that all Adept weapons had Bottomless Grief or Celerity intrinsic, right? Not as like a selectable perk. I think that would be enough to make them very good without making them like straight up game breaking, right? Like, what those perks do is not going to like turn the game on its head if some guns have them and other guns don't. But I believe Chris has told us many times in the past that there is a limit on how many perks you can put on a gun before it starts to break the gun. And all the guns currently are like up against that limit right now.
Right.
So, you know, my preferred method of making them a little bit more sought after is unfortunately seemingly not possible.
Yeah. So I do think it's a difficult question. On the one hand, having a fixed perk that is going to give you a bonus that is, you know, at the very least, always somewhat useful for the playlist that the weapon is generally intended for. You know, so Bottomless Grief, having extra ammo in the mag, generally always useful. Like, it's not bad. Is it optimal? Probably not in most situations, but if you like the other three perks on the roll and the perk in that column is trash, well, hey, you've got Bottomless Grief or, you know, Celerity. So I think having that consistency and sort of reducing what is needed to get a playable role is very nice, but not, I mean, meaningful is really the key word there. And it's tough to say what's going to be meaningful because it's going to vary from person to person. That said, the Adept mods, as you point out, are really good. I mean, Adept Icarus is just like, why would you not, right? It's just it's Icarus, but better. And Icarus is already arguably one of the best mods for just general play. So, and that's just one, right? There's a whole bunch of them. By and large, they're all either just flat out good, or they give you an interesting trade-off that allows you to lean into a specific play style or a specific situation where you're trying to do something. So I think having the Adept mods is sort of Bungie's consolation prize for saying, well, we can't really like add extra perks on, even if they were minor, but we can give you better mods. And I think that's pretty good. And I think if we continue to see mods expand in the future, that we will likely see Adept mods expand as well, which will continue to increase the power and versatility of the Adept weapons. I also think it's a good and healthy thing that the weapons are not significantly better than their non-Adept counterparts. And, you know, we've all lived through those times in Destiny where there was a weapon that was significantly better that was locked behind some very difficult achievement that most people weren't going to get. And those were unpleasant times. Gatekeeping powerful weapons behind very hard content is just not the way that Destiny works best.
Yeah.
So, I'd love to see also maybe some more cosmetic upgrades available. Throw in some Adept ornaments out there would be pretty friggin' sweet. And I think there's a lot of room for them to do things to continue to differentiate the Adept weapons without increasing power creep, especially on the cosmetic side of things.
I mean, what you said about not locking game-changing weapons behind a skill thing is really a requirement of Destiny at this point in time. Like, you can lock as many aesthetic things as you want, but like exotic armor and weapons that are the best weapons in the game can never, you can't have those locked behind a skill barrier, basically. You can have them locked behind like a playtime barrier, where like people have to play a substantial amount to have them, but you can't really have them locked behind a skill barrier, because then there's literally the possibility that some people will never get them without paying for a recovery.
Right.
Which is very unhealthy for the ecosystem of the game. The biggest issue, I think, with Adept weapons right now is that they are not motivating to the casual player. Like, Adept weapons are motivating to the min-maxer. And the casual player looks at Adept weapons as like, yeah, it'd be nice to have, but like, I don't need to play Trials to get it. I don't need to run a Grandmaster. I think that's an issue. I'm not entirely sure how you address that, right? Like, I know the aesthetic things are wonderful. I've said a million times that I would care more about getting an ornament for Messenger for going flawless than I would getting like an Adept Messenger most of the time. Like, if I could slap an ornament on my normal Messenger that looks pretty dope for going flawless, like, that would actually be more motivating to me than most of the time getting an Adept weapon is.
It's a hard problem, right? If you want to motivate more people to do those playlists, rewards are one avenue, and really like big, noticeable, obvious cosmetic rewards that stand out in a flashy way. It's a great way to do it. That's a way that a lot of MMOs since time immemorial have done it. Some dude walks into the room and he's just like friggin' glowing bright green. You're like, okay, how do I get that?
Trials and D1 did it.
Yeah.
They had those ornaments that you could put on. They had like the flawless armor that was super brightly colored and had glows on it and everything. And it's like, Trials and D1 did a lot of stuff right that we still haven't gone back to in detail.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating because the playlist feels about as dead as it's ever been at this point in time. PvP in general feels about as dead as it's ever been.
I think they have to step up the cosmetics game and really go over the top and flashy and big if they want to get people's attention and get them excited to go and run for this stuff. I don't think more powerful rewards is the answer. I think rewards drop pretty generously by and large. I'd like to see, honestly, less randomization in the rewards, but not necessarily more of them, or not necessarily stronger ones.
Yeah, we've talked about something like the seasonal progression path, but for Trials, or the seasonal progression path, but for Crucible or Gambit.
Yeah.
But when I think of aesthetic rewards, like when someone walks in with a flawless set of armor on, you should either know immediately he went flawless to get that, or you should be asking, how did he get that?
Exactly.
Right. Like those are the type of things that it should do. So, all right. Great question from Solitary Bird. Thank you very much for that. Next question is from a patron, maybe a crook. He says, you're in charge of designing new Crucible maps. What do you prioritize in your changes from what is currently available? The first thing that I would do is make some longer range maps. I mean, and some rift maps, right? Like, I would love to see maps that... So this is horrible because...
He didn't say, like, game modes. You can't bring rift.
I know.
And we can't talk about rift. If we ever want to talk to anyone from Bungie, they're not going to...
Yeah. That's the problem, right? Like, the only simple thing I would do with maps is I would just make a couple maps with longer sightlines. Like, they don't even necessarily need to be bigger maps.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they can play like Bannerfall or like Midtown, where you have long sightlines and you have short sightlines, and you kind of choose your engagements based on your loadout that you have. Right? That being said, like, I don't think new maps are what PvP needs the most right now. I think new game modes are what PvP needs the most. Like, more than anything else, I think new game modes are what PvP needs the most, specifically objective-based game modes, things that aren't just Slayer with extra steps, which is all we have right now. So for me, that's a simple one, is like, just give me maps that have more options for longer sight lines. So not every map, with the exception of two, is telling me, like, put on a hand cannon and a shotgun, which is what most of them are doing right now.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. I mean, I agree. Just 100%. I'd love to see a lot more variation in the way that the maps are set up, in terms of how they structure the lanes. I'd like to see some more variation in how they set up the map. You know, we ages and ages and ages ago, we did a map breakdown talking about the different types of PvP maps that exist in general and that exist in Destiny specifically, and analyzing and breaking them down. We talk every now and then about going back and doing that, and it's just a matter of committing the time, I think, at this point, and hopefully that's something we'll be able to do in the near future. But that all said, you know, bigger maps with more interesting sight lines, or a greater variety of sight lines that allow you to play different engagements or different strategies would be great. But to really push people to choose a variety of strategies and to make a variety of strategies viable, you have to have objectives that are interesting. You know, one of the great things about Rift or any capture the flag type game is that it allows for people to play multiple different strategies. On any kind of map, even a big open map, you still have to have people to rush. You still have to have people who are going to play passive and stay back and guard. You need people to support the people who are rushing. You know, so there's a lot going on. It's one of the reasons that it's, in my opinion, one of the best game modes that it has ever been made in the PvP shooter. That was not exclusively what I played in Halo, but it was definitely the majority of what I played in Halo by a significant margin, because it was fantastic. And Rift was a fantastic Destiny twist that I would love to see come back. You know, but
when we all
there's a lot of innovation going on in PvP gaming right now, and there's a lot that Bungie could take inspiration from. I think it's just a matter of if they're willing to commit the time and the resources to do it. So far, that's not been the case.
Next up is from Fatal, and he says, what changes would you make to the 180 hand cannons to make them competitive with other hand cannons? Currently, they are the slowest time to kill, the least range, the most required number of hits. The only benefit they boast is a faster buffed TTK than a 140, but still slower than a 120. All of the above puts them in a weird spot. How would you go about fixing that? I look at it like there are two options you can do here. One, you buff the body shot damage just a little bit so that they two crit, two body on all resiliences. Right now, anybody running, I think, above six resilience or higher is going to three crit one body. So I could buff the body shot damage by like 2 points, make them 2 crit, 2 body, makes them super, super easy to use. They're probably still not going to be tremendously useful, but that's entirely fine, right? The other alternative, and this would only be an alternative that I would ever do if my ultimate dream of having aim assist pretty much nerfed for hand cannons across the board. You know, I really think that aim assist needs to be nerfed for hand cannons, just like flat out, like every single one of them needs to have their aim assist toned down pretty much massively, right? Like they're supposed to be precision weapons. They should reward being precise. I would nerf their aim assist and I would make them a 3 crit kill in 0.67 seconds, which would be super, super fast. But again, they're limited by having the least range. And I would make them do way less body shot damage so that they would be extremely punishing of missed crits.
So with hand cannons, I think the only way that we could really see aim assist get nerfed is if they also significantly nerfed bloom. Because the bloom mechanic, unfortunately, sort of makes it's a sort of a like a vicious cycle, right? They put in bloom, and so now if they don't have a bunch of aim assist, they feel like crap. But if they just had less aim assist and also didn't have bloom or just had way, way less bloom, they'd probably feel fine and they'd have a much higher skill gap.
Well, I'm entirely fine with removing bloom. You know that I hate all RNG mechanics associated with primary weapons. I hate flinch. I hate bloom. Two sides of the same shitty coin. Like, honestly, and this is a horrible thing to say, but like if it were up to me, I wouldn't even have recoil. Like, or I would have significantly reduced recoil, like mouse and keyboard level recoil for all the guns across the board. Like, I think anything that adds RNG to a primary weapon fight is frustrating and should be frowned upon. I think they're just, I don't think they're mechanics that are fun for anyone, right? Because you don't know when your flinch is making someone else miss, but you sure as hell know when you're missing because of flinch. And secondarily, you don't know when bloom is making your opponent miss, but you sure as hell know that bloom. So like there's a, it is not a net zero thing. It is just a like neutral and lose situation for the player who's using it and the player who's playing against it. So,
right. The only outcome, either you don't notice it at all or you notice it and it's a bad thing. Yeah, absolutely. I completely see where you're coming from on those. I don't necessarily have any other suggestions on how to improve those. They used to be, if I recall, 2 crit, 2 body pretty consistently up to maybe not all the way to max resilience, but pretty high. The simplest thing to do would simply be to put them back to where they were. So
I'm not entirely sure if their damage got nerfed. I think the resilience meta changed. So I don't know necessarily that they were always, I think they did 2 crit, 2 body in practice because everyone was running like 4 resilience and less. And then the resilience meta shifted and everybody started running 6.
That could be. And that could be what's jogging my memory here. But I know I was doing 2 crit, 2 body pretty consistently for a long time with these.
And so now it doesn't feel like they ever do 2 crit, 2 body.
Yeah.
It's just because the resilience meta changed. But yeah, I mean, hand cannons, like people are like, oh, there are way more creative things you could do with them. Sure. But like my style of balancing, should I be the person in charge of the sandbox, would be like, little things, little changes here and there. Like, I don't want to crazily change the way an entire archetype works. I don't think it, a lot of the time, I don't think they need that kind of change. Like, a lot of times, I think with very small tweaks, you can actually make guns go from being entirely unused to like really usable or even pretty good. And 120 hand cannons are, you know, a perfect example of that, of getting their RPM increased by 10 and getting their range buffed by like 4 meters. And they became the most, they went from being some of the least used guns in the game to some of the most dominant guns in the game.
Yep.
Right. Like you can change things just a teeny little bit. You don't have to reinvent an archetype or remove an entire archetype, although that does need to probably happen to some places. But all right. Next question is Reality Verbally. He said, with the season 15 light subclass tuning coming up, do you think that we will see anti-champion mods implemented on the subclass level or element level? So are you saying like you will have a melee that by default will be like unstoppable melee, like by default?
That's the way I'm reading the question. I do not think that we will see that. I think that if and when light subclasses get the stasis subclass treatment, that we may see aspects and mods go in that direction, or aspects and fragments, excuse me, go in that direction. But I think that's probably a long way in the future right now.
Yeah. I have to agree with you. I don't foresee them doing something like that, simply because it would be ineffective in PvP as far as the buff goes. It would probably have a huge test wake to do something like that, to make a change like that. And I don't think that light subclasses need that kind of help in PvE, right? Like it feels like opening up a massive can of worms for a benefit that's not necessarily needed at this point in time.
Well, they're also already doing anti-champion mods on armor that affect specific light, you know, abilities. So like your void melees, you know, will do whatever.
Right, on the artifact.
Will stop an unstoppable. Yeah, from the artifact. So I would expect that we continue to see it coming from the artifact for the foreseeable future. But like I said, if they do, fingers crossed, when they do completely retool the light subclasses from the ground up, it would make it, I think, much easier for them to do something like that. I don't think right now, the way light is, the light classes are structured, we couldn't have a specific ability that was like where the champion mod was like a built-in part of it, because it would be significantly better in PvE versus PvP, and like it would just totally change the feel of it, right? I don't know. I really doubt that they would do something like that, because you can't pick and choose. There's no mix and match, so
you're just stuck with it.
Yeah.
Ivan F. Karamazov says, "Full choke, should it go away? It's the dominant barrel, as it's the only one improving one-hit kill directly by the cone angles. I literally shard all my shotguns without full choke. It's that dramatic." So while I agree that, yes, full choke is like the only option for a shotgun barrel right now, I mean, that's kind of indicative of how shotguns have always played. Like, the only thing people care about in PvE with shotguns is one-hit kill range. Despite their attempts to make the two-tap with shotguns matter, what has happened is that people have just said, nope, still only care about one-hit kill range. I'll use a precision slug shotgun, I'll use a precision pellet shotgun, I'll use Felwinters. Like, I don't care about anything else.
So I would disagree with that statement. I think rifled barrel still has value as an alternative to full choke, because full choke requires that you aim down sights. And specifically for like a very aggressive playstyle, there are going to be a lot of situations where you're not going to aim down sights before you fire, or even where aiming down sights is literally a waste of your time. That fraction of a second, if you're running a Reese Walker, that fraction of a second in the range that you have to operate in probably gets you killed, versus somebody who's just running a rifled barrel, accurized Reese Walker. You likely lose that battle. When aggressive shotguns were dominant, I think it mattered a lot more because the range was much greater, and so there was more margin of error. Now you have to be in spitting distance with pretty much every shotgun. So I think full choke is still very good if you're trying to max out your one-hit kill range, but if you're sliding 20 meters and just pulling the trigger each time you pass by someone, like, you're not aiming down sights, I hope. That's my take, you know. Your mileage may vary. Yeah.
I mean, you know what's really just the dumbest thing I've ever seen is that I'm looking at Compass Rares right now on light.gg, because I was like, oh, I wonder if like the majority of the community feels that way. Do you know what the most used barrel perk on Compass Rares is on light.gg? And it's not even close. It's over 55% of people use this perk.
I it's
fucking smoothbore.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No. The worst possible perk that you could have on your shotgun.
Even worry about full choke. Like, everyone else is using smoothbore. Don't even worry about it, man.
All right, let me look up Reese Walker and let me see what people are using on that one. Maybe it's just Compass Rose, because Compass Rose has gotten by a bunch of players and they're just they don't necessarily know what it is they're doing. I mean, my thing is that, yes, like that is technically the truth. Let's see what it is on. So Rifled Barrel is the most, 26% on Reese Walker. Full Choke is 16%. So, I mean, I guess statistically, numerically, like an obsession with Full Choke is not supported by usage numbers of the perk. Like maybe it is supported by extremely hardcore PvP players who are trying to max out that one hit kill distance, but everyone else has decided like, it's not really worth it. Like I'll just go with the accurate hip fire because we know now that, you know, hip firing doesn't increase the range. It doesn't tighten the pellet spread. It doesn't, unless you have Full Choke, it doesn't do anything other than your aim assist, you know, fall off still gets pushed out a little bit more, but which is helpful, right?
Which
it makes it more accurate,
nothing.
But you know, it's not what it used to do in D1 or even earlier in D2. So
maybe everyone with Compass Rose is two tapping. Smooth bore might be good for two tapping. I don't know.
I mean, I can't imagine it being so, but
yeah, you only need half the pellets to hit, then you might as well use smooth bore, right?
But you know, everyone with Felwinters is using Full Choke because they have no other option.
Well,
so
yeah.
And it pairs with Shaw Package, so.
Yeah, exactly. With Felwinters, it'd be silly not to use Full Choke. And I think that is a big reason why Full Choke was seen as dominant most recently. In addition to the fact that it literally has been one of the two best barrel perks for, the life of Destiny 2 on shotguns. It's pretty much always been Rifled Barrel or Full Choke.
So I guess my answer, because we've kind of gotten away from what the actual question was, but I guess my answer to this is like, no, I would not remove Full Choke. I don't think it's necessary to remove Full Choke. What I would love to see happen is I would love to see shotguns be given a pellet spread pattern, like a standardized pellet spread pattern, and remove the RNG of the pellet. I think that would
like
go
fusions.
A long way. Kind of, yeah. I mean, more like Cerberus or Bastion or something like that, right? Where it's like a defined shape that they always shoot and you don't ever have to worry about it being RNG. I'd love to see that happen. I would definitely prefer that. I think more people at the higher levels then would say, maybe I don't need Full Choke anymore. Maybe I can go with Rifled Barrel. Although it seems like at a wide level across the board, Full Choke may not be as unanimous a selection as I thought it was, or as Ivan thought it was.
I would remove probably Corkscrew Rifling, because just why would you ever use it? It's always like third tier choice at best. Maybe it's second best sometimes if you have small bore. I don't know. It's a bad perk. Get rid of it.
Yeah. Next question, Skull says, should SMGs get the Shadowkeep hand cannon treatment, making range less impactful, but maybe increasing the drop off to start increasing the drop-off start by a huge chunk to make SMGs that aren't 17 zoom with high range viable in PvP. I mean, I'm hesitant to do that, right? Like, I wouldn't want to increase the damage drop-off start by a huge chunk. I think that would encroach on other guns' useful ranges. Now granted, if we're going to trim archetypes, like we're going to get rid of, you know, 720 RPM ARs and we're going to do something with the fusion rifles, which we know they are going to do something with the fusion rifles, we just don't know what it is yet. But I think Shiro's is pretty good and pretty strong, and I would be concerned if there were more SMGs that were like, if it were common for SMGs to be that good and have that much range. I think what makes Shiura's pretty neat is that it is unique and that it is special and that it is a little bit better than everything else. I would be worried if every other SMG in the game played the same way. Now, I know multi-mock is also up there because it can get scopes, right? Which, you know, balance its range up. I think the default range is 1.3. And I think it can get as high as like 1.6, maybe, or 1.7.
You can get 1.7, with the Model 8 Red.
So, I mean, I'd love to see maybe more scope options on SMGs, more sight options on SMGs that allow some zoom variation. But I would not necessarily want to see more SMGs reaching those ranges just like by default, you know?
Yeah, I would agree with that statement. SMGs currently have pretty decent in-air accuracy, especially if you throw an Icarus mod on there. It's honestly, if you have Icarus and the Icarus mod, it's just as good as when they're on the ground. It'll end up, you know, maxing its bloom a little higher, but it starts out just as if they were on the ground. So it's really pretty good. I would not want them to be more accurate, because then we would have an SMG meta, which is just not fun for me personally.
Yeah. As much as I hate like scout rifle metas, I also really did not enjoy the recluse meta. Now, recluse was a special case, but like, I don't have a ton of interest in reliving anything even close to that. So
a short range auto rifle meta is effectively what it is. And that just sounds like a not good place for the game to go. I don't want to come down too hard though. In the spirit of the question, in terms of seeing other SMGs be more viable options, I think that would take some more substantial changes. I think that would take some trimming, like you said, maybe getting rid of an archetype that isn't useful, because we don't need three bad archetypes of SMGs.
Oh, we've got, when you look at SMGs that see use, right? Shirayas sees good use in PvP. Multimach sees good use in PvP. In PvE, yep, you have both a precision and an aggressive that see good use. And the Seventh Seraph side, or the Seventh Seraph SMG and the Aikalos SMG. Really the only, sadly, just forgotten archetype is the adaptives, which are pretty much just like falling by the wayside. Like, I don't think we've gotten a new adaptive in like over a year. I wouldn't mind seeing that archetype just folded into the lightweights, because that really the difference between them is like almost meaningless.
They're very close. Yeah.
So when you look at it, it may be that like a couple archetypes of SMG aren't great for PvP, but they're pretty good for PvP. Like they're not great for PvP, but they're pretty great for PvE, and then vice versa. I think you could see a lot more usage out of SMGs if you just gave them sights, like people have been asking for forever. Barrel perks are so boring on primary weapons. Like, sights dramatically change the way guns play and can play. Yeah. Barrel perks are just kind of a more boring option. Like, just give them some sights. And then that way, yeah, you can go for a roll on a stoichiatric, you know, variable or whatever that has a +6 zoom scope, and it just makes it like a laser. Like, that's fun to me. That's interesting. That's unique. Just bumping every SMG's range up by a chunk, by like 3 meters or something. To me, that's dangerous.
One thing that I wouldn't mind seeing maybe an experiment with is changing up the way scopes work for some guns, because the way it kind of works now is when you get if you have a high zoom scope, it also gives you a big range buff at the same time. If you have a low zoom scope, it tends to give you no range buff or a very small one. I think it might be interesting to flip that on its head, put a big range bump on the low zoom scopes, no range bump on the high zoom scopes, because they're already going to shoot way further. And so then you have a dichotomy between leaning into hip fire and leaning into ADS, which gives people a choice in how they choose to play with the gun and how it's going to feel.
Right. But the problem with doing that is the same thing. People said that for a long time about shotguns too. Like, make aggressives have the least range and make rapid fires have the most range. Well, what ends up happening if you do that wrong is that they all end up killing at the exact same distance. Right. And then the only thing that matters ends up being, in shotguns case, it ends up being rate of fire. Right. But with SMGs or with something with sights, what you would end up with is like, well, if my long zoom scope kills at the same distance as my low zoom scope, then range becomes essentially meaningless. And the only thing you're looking for is, in the case, like, you would have a choice between field of view and the stability offered by a high zoom scope. Like, those would be your only trade-offs, right? Whereas right now, most people don't care as much about the stability offered by a high zoom scope. The only reason they're using it is because of how far it pushes out their kill distance, because your field of view is constrained so badly by it that otherwise it's like it's almost not worth the trade-off. If you make low zoom scopes have a similar range buff, even without the magnification, which would be a huge range buff because it's linear instead of multiplicative, like you would end up with, I don't know, sidearms with like a 1.1 or 1.3, like a base zoom scope, killing it like 30 meters. And, you know, I'd be worried that the aim assist cones at that distance would be massive, basically. And because the zoom also serves to constrict the aim assist cone. So at 30 meters, you don't have this massive fat aim assist cone like you would on an SMG up close.
You can already, you know, if you get accurized or something, you can already throw a similar range buff to what I'm talking about on those guns, and it doesn't break them. So I'm just saying, if an extra 10 range doesn't break them now, 10 more probably isn't going to either, because with the high zoom scopes, you get the best of both worlds. You get the higher range. So even when you're hip firing, you're getting that extra range, and then you also get to zoom and get, you know, an extra 3 meters that puts you way outside what you can do hip firing. So my thinking, I guess, was that this wouldn't bring them together, but that it might leave them a little bit closer, and it would make the high zoom SMGs, they'd have that extra, you know, they'd probably still have about an extra 3 meters or whatever it is, depending on their range otherwise. But when you try to hip fire them, they're going to be noticeably shorter range, whereas a gun with a low zoom scope but a nice big range buff is going to be pretty effective hip firing. But then when you ADS it doesn't really do a whole lot for you. It maybe adds a meter instead of adding three. And so you're almost, you know, unless you just really have to plink somebody to get that last chip damage to finish him off, you're not even going to bother. So that was my thinking. Just kind of giving people the ability to lean in to straight hip fire or ADSing. But now I feel like I'm getting way off topic.
Yeah, no, I suppose that's a fair idea, though. At this point, just give SMGs full choke, just give them intrinsic, something like that, where they're just more accurate. What is it, fan fire, that the last word has? Just give SMGs fan fire and let them in hip fire. Let them do what they wish.
You could just get rid of ADS on SMGs, just make them a straight hip fire gun.
Hey, it worked in Halo, right?
Yeah,
good work here. All right. Next up, Drifter's Choice says, again, SMGs and sidearms. In regards to SMGs and sidearms, which is more important inside of 20 meters, consistency or lethality? Well, you know, it's like when you're getting into college. I don't know if it is anymore, but when I was applying to state schools, 15 years ago to go to college, they had like a sliding scale, right? And like the higher your SAT score was, the lower your GPA could be, or vice versa. The higher your GPA is, the lower your SAT score could be. It's kind of that way with consistency and lethality, right? Like you can't necessarily say which is more important inside of 20 meters, because if I give you a recluse, which kills in 0.4 seconds and it has shit consistency, well, you're still going to be killing faster than everyone else, right? So like if you push anything outside the bounds of what is safe, it's going to be dominant regardless of what the other one is, right? We saw it with 120s where their TTK was the worst in the game, but their ease of use was so incredibly high, it literally didn't matter. And, you know, we've seen it before with other weapons where their TTK was so fast that ease of use was basically almost meaningless, right? Like if the time to kill is that broken, it just doesn't really matter, because even if you're not hitting all your crits, you're still going to kill fast enough that it's over important. So I know it's kind of cheating to say like they're both pretty important, but they both are really important. Like it's the combination of the two. And at this point inside 20 meters, I mean, if you look at what's popular, I think it's right now it's consistency is leading a bit. Like the SMGs that are most popular are not the ones that have the fastest TTK. Now, Multimach does, right, at 0.67, But the other option, Shire's Wrath, is a 0.8. And I think it's more popular than Multimach by a pretty fair amount in the usage numbers. So I think consistency right now is winning out. Now, when you look at sidearms, the most popular sidearm, although there's not really a ton that are popular right now, but probably the most used legendary sidearm. I mean, didn't we just go over these numbers
last week?
It's the Last Dance. So that one's at 0.67 seconds, which is, I mean, technically it could be at 0.50 seconds if you hit all six headshots, but nobody ever does that. But so, you know, that one seems to be that time to kill is winning. So it's different for sidearms compared to SMGs. For sidearms, people tend to prioritize time to kill. For SMGs, it seems like they're prioritizing consistency.
I think there's also a little bit here, and I think this probably falls under consistency more than lethality, but the ease of use of the weapon makes a huge, huge difference. And so, like, take Shire's Wrath. Like, I know zoomed in, it's a pretty constrained view, but it allows you to hit somebody from way outside, right? So it's sort of breaking the rules there. But Multimach, on the other hand, most of the time you can just hip fire. It's got great in-air accuracy. So it's just very, very easy to use. And like we talked about before, Shire's Wrath is kind of a special case for SMGs. It's like the modern day Antiope D, where you zoom in and it's just like hitting from way outside, but significantly outside the ranges that you would normally expect an SMG to operate in. So that kind of allows it to break that rule a little bit. But it's also slower firing, which can make it, I don't know. Like you said, it's a balance of both, and it's hard to argue. Is it lethality? Is it consistency? Are they the same thing in some cases? What I'll say is this. In terms of perks, and I think this is where you're coming from, Drifter's Choice, in terms of perk selection, if I'm leaning toward perks that bump up damage in order to help me get the fastest possible time to kill on an SMG or a sidearm, or if I'm leaning toward perks that give me tons of extra range, or I'm sorry, tons of extra stability, maybe some extra range as well. In other words, that are just going to make the gun more accurate, more consistent at hitting the shots, but not necessarily kill any faster than usual, I'm going to go with stability and a little bit of range. Pretty much every time. I love how fast sidearms and SMGs can kill with kill clip active. But ultimately, I'd rather win that first gunfight, right? That's one of my guiding principles generally in selecting perks is make sure you win the first gunfight, then win the second one. And some guns, you can do that and you can still have a great damage dealing perk that's going to set you up. And some guns, it's a little iffier. And for me, sidearms and SMGs are typically a little iffier where they're great as long as you're hitting your shots. But if you go wide, if a hunter dodges and you lose aim assist and just start spraying everywhere, like that's a bad time. And all the damage bonus perks in the world aren't going to save you.
So Shire's Wrath and Multimach are actually very close in terms of usage numbers. They're within four on the usage chart. Shire's Wrath, the Adept one, is at 0.49% usage, and Multimach is at 0.44% usage. So they're actually very close to each other in usage. Now, that being said, the actual Shire's Wrath, the non-adept one, is at 1.44% usage, way up the board. Actually, very high up, too. It's only two spots below Bastion, so if that tells you how well used it is. I think people are probably going to agree with you that as long as the TTK isn't just absolutely abysmal, they're going to prefer the consistency of what they can do.
I'm not going to use it in the first place if it's really terrible.
Yeah, if the time to kill is 1 second on an SMG, like, it doesn't matter how easy it is to use, you're never going to get a kill with it because you're going to die over and over again. But people are clearly passing up SMGs that kill in 0.67 or 0.7, well, in this case, 0.73 seconds. They're passing up the adaptives, right, which kill in 0.73 seconds, 2 frames faster than what Shire's Wrath kills in. They're passing up the aggressives, which kill in 0.67 seconds, 4 frames faster than what Shire's Wrath can kill in. They're passing those up because Shire's Wrath is just flat out easier to use and the consistency is better. Now, sidearms, right? Like, you've got some sidearms that are pretty easy to use. Aggressive burst, 3 crits, 2 bodies. Time to kill isn't even really that much slower than some of the others, but they're still not used a ton, right? So,
which honestly is shocking to me because I think, I don't know, for me, in terms of like how I feel a match goes, like the perceived effect on how well I play, an aggressive burst sidearm is just like head and shoulders above any other sidearm right now. But that's, you know, that's anecdotal for you, right? I like it because it probably fits the way that I play. And apparently it's not true for other people.
I wish I could see what the second most used legendary sidearm was, but unfortunately there's only one legendary sidearm on the top 100 and it's just the Last Dance. I would honestly have to guess that I think it would probably be Fool's Remedy, wouldn't you? The full auto Suras sidearm from Iron Banner.
Oh God, I hate those so much.
Yeah, it's such a unique sound. You just know when you've been killed by it.
I don't get killed by it usually. I hate them because I try to, like, I hear people say that they're good and I use them and I'm just like, this is garbage.
They're not too bad, actually. They are pretty good. I know Cammy harps on those things about being the best sidearm out there in the game. I don't know about that, but they are pretty good. They're pretty funny to use, especially when they're damage buffed and you can just,
I love Cammy's videos, but I can't take his advice.
No one can take
his advice. Never works out for me.
This game is the best player in the world. He doesn't give advice for the common folk. But yeah, I mean, it also depends what you have competing with you, right? Like, what do you have competing with SMGs right now in the 15 meter range? It's Fusions and Chroma Rush, right? And that's pretty much it. So you can kind of run consistency perks there and be fine. Whereas what do you have competing with shotguns and sub, or what do you have competing with SMGs and sub, not SMGs, sidearms, God, and sub 10 meters, it's shotguns, right?
Yeah.
And things like Bastion. And so you can't really afford to not kill as fast as you possibly can. So, you know, when there's something else that can kill you really fast and is pretty easy to use in sub 10 meters, like your sidearm, it doesn't really matter if it's super easy to use. Like, you're going to die if you don't kill someone immediately. Whereas SMGs, it's like, well, you're outranging sidearms. Not a ton of people are using fusions, although more are. Like, you know, Chroma Rush is out there, but it's not exactly like it's meta right now. So you kind of have a little bit more leeway to say, okay, I'm going to spec into making this gun feel good. I don't need to hit a maximum fast TTK. So the answer to this question is that it's variable and the situation is fluid.
Yep.
And that right now, I think for SMGs, consistency matters more. And for sidearms, I think time to kill matters.
All right, fair enough. Well, let's...
A very long answer to that question.
It was. Well, I think we've got a kind of a fun final question here from Reality Verbally, coming in with the second question. What's a weapon archetype and perk combo that you think should be available more frequently? An example would be triple tap on a pulse rifle. I don't think I've ever seen triple tap on a pulse rifle.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's one with it, but I like that.
Can't say that I've seen that either. I would like to see opening shot or like tap the trigger on fusions more. It's a perk that basically like is going to be active every single time you fire the gun. And I really, really wanted an opening shot fusion from that raid in the last city, which I'm now Scourge of the Past. And I never got one. And I'm constantly bummed that they've never made another one. Although at the same time, I feel like tap the trigger does the exact same thing. So maybe just, you know, at least on a fusion, right, equivalently. So maybe just give me tap the trigger on a couple fusions and like I'll take that. I think that'd be pretty nice.
Well, fair enough. Boy, I'm like drawing a blank now here.
Oh, Firefly on an auto rifle. Firefly on an auto rifle is super fun in D1.
There you go.
I love that a lot.
There you go. Well, I think that's two good suggestions. I'm going to say I don't have anything to add. I always have a hard time with these hypotheticals because I'm very happy with what I get. I'm too content to reach too far outside of the realm of what is.
So Tap the Trigger rolled on actually a decent amount of fusion rifles. Old Dreambreaker, old Arentol, Gallant Charge, which is gone, old Main Ingredient, old Perolium, old Epicurean, old Wise and Rebuked, and then the Trinary System. So I think that maybe they learned their lesson and they were like, maybe we shouldn't be putting Tap the Trigger on fusion rifles. Because it used to roll a lot on fusions, apparently, and now it just doesn't roll at all. But I would love to see it on a fusion that was a high impact fusion or a fusion that I could actually use.
Yeah, that's fair. I still have nothing. I'm sorry. I fail.
We'll come back to it next week. During the intro next week, you can give your idea for what you would have liked to have seen.
Oh boy, that's a lot of pressure.
You have the whole time at the beach to think about it.
I guarantee I am not going to be thinking about it at the beach. There's a lot of beer downstairs that will ensure that happens.
You drink beer? I had no idea.
I mean, once in a while.
Occasionally partake.
Yeah. It's the beach. It's tradition. So,
Well, I believe that is it for this episode in terms of listener questions. Managed to carry us over an hour, which is always pretty impressive. It's almost, I don't think we should make a habit of not answering questions for 2 weeks and then answering all the questions in one episode. But I do really enjoy answering questions, Rambo. I think it's quite a good time.
Yeah, it's always fun to see what questions people come up with, and usually to try to give a good answer.
Also, I kind of really want to go over the usage numbers again for guns, because I was looking at them while we were doing this episode a little bit, and I think they've really changed. Like, I think the trends that we were seeing last week are like solidifying now. And some guns are really just shooting up the rankings. And I think this is the beginnings of a slightly fresh new meta. Now, hand cans are obviously going to be the dominant ones, but there's a little bit of change. So maybe we'll have to talk about that when we come back next week.
Well, got a few things to look forward to, Guardians. Thank you so much for spending another hour listening to Destiny Massive Breakdowns. We'll see you next time. Peace.
Bye.